Oldsmobile William, where you gone?
Yeah, 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 oh,
oh, Oldsmobile William, when you coming back?
Yeah, 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 oh, oh,
Oldsmobile William, what you gonna do?
Well, I'm gonna do the bird if I can, if I can. Gonna do the bird if I can.
Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local musicians and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Frank Prout from Gregory D. and the Avantes. Today is August 28th, 2011, and I'm talking with Frank Prout. Frank, if you wouldn't mind, would you share with us your full name, date of birth, and hometown?
Full name is Frank Thomas Prout. Date of birth, 3/20/46, hometown, St. Louis Park.
What do you recall about your early experiences with the local music scene?
Well, I recall listening to the radio, having a lot of friends around, and enjoying playing, jamming with just friends to the hit records. KDWB and WDGY was really inspired all of us back then. They had a record out with Bobby V on it that was just wonderful, and it had Sleepwalk on it and different hits like that that we always would play at our dances and stuff. And I wanted to be part of that. I wanted to create some music, and I thought I could create music and play. So I started taking guitar lessons, and I picked up cheap acoustic guitar with F-holes in it. I think it was a Framus. And I played that guitar until my fingers bled on the back porch outside, and the people going to mass down the street would walk by in the evening and listen to me play Chet Atkins tunes and try to get it together with my sound. It was a wonderful time to learn.
And what year did you decide to put a band together?
I put a band together back in end of 1959, 1960. I called it the Exotics, and it was a four-piece band, and we recorded a record. The guys in the band were Scott Pasco, Don Kelsted, Glenn Walker, and me. I did most of the singing. They sang backup. Don played bass. Scott played drums. Glenn played lead guitar. He came from California and had that California sound back then, that beach party sound that people loved. And and so that was important to us to have a sound like that, you know, added to the band back in those days.
The Exotics is kind of a unique name. How did you come up with that name?
It was just a name that had some X's in it. And an X in it and an E, and that stood out, and I liked that name. It kind of represented the way we were. We were exotic in stepping out and putting our own music together back in those days, you know, that time. So we called it the Exotics.
What kind of music did the band play?
Oh, we played rock and roll. We rocked the dances, you know, anything they could dance to. Even, you know, if I couldn't sing it, we'd just play the rhythm. Or we'd learn a song off the radio on the way to the gig. We'd learn the words right off the radio. And we'd get there and I'd say, "Have you heard this song?" And they'd all go, "Yeah, let's do this one." And we'd do it. And we did it amazingly well. Our minds were fresh. We were young, you know, and we could do that back in those days.
Where did the band practice?
At my house down in the basement. Mm-hmm. We had a nice music scene set up there. Like, we had tables with candles on them, but nobody there. But we'd pretend that there were people there. And it made us feel like there was an audience, and that really helped.
What places did the band play at?
We played at any gig we could get, private parties, out in the middle of the countryside in an old shack that fell down after the beer soaked into the legs of the cabin, to Legion halls. We played Legions, a lot of Legions. Kids would come and just dance and have a blast. And I remember listening to that record by the the brothers.
The Righteous Brothers?
Righteous Brothers. And it was...
Little Latin Loopy Loop?
No, the other one. They had a big hit on it, a slow song.
Oh, You've Lost That Loving Feeling?
Yes, yes. You've Lost That Loving Feeling. Mm-hmm. We couldn't do that song because that was a hard vocal to sing. We never did that song. We just left that alone. We knew our limits back then, you know, even then. So
you record this 45 in the first year of the band, correct? 1959?
Mm-hmm.
And what songs were on the 45?
Well, I wrote a song called When I Say or I Love the Way She Kisses. I never could decide what to call it.
And, you had two names for it?
Yeah. And then we had a song on the flip side, which was just a jam that to get us two songs. And I wrote the first song, and it was a good song. And we sounded like the Kinks, kind of.
What was the title of the B-side?
The B-side, Walkin'. Yeah, that was it.
And do you recall the studio that was recorded at?
No, I wish I could, and I've tried to think of it.
Where was it located?
It was in North Minneapolis. It was in a guy's house in the front room. It was just a two-track, and they advertised, we can make a record for you, and it was an acetate when they were done. And we only had 50 made, and it was amazing, acetate. And I got airplay. I brought it to the record to the station, and I believe Bill Deal got airplay for me on it. We got to hear our record on the air, and that was the biggest thrill in the world, to hear your creation on a record, on coming off on the radio, driving down the street in your car to Porky's. We used to go from both Porky's in Minneapolis and drive. And when we heard our record, it was the biggest thrill in the world. I can't explain how wonderful that was.
And you put that out on your own label?
Yeah, we made up a label back then, and I think it was Astral or something like that, some off-the-wall label. It wasn't even put on the record. I'm sure we would have gotten a label if it would have gone somewhere. It was an experiment.
Did you take your records to Nickel Lake Records?
No.
You didn't try to get it?
I didn't know where to go. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. It was all a new experience. You know, we get to that point and we go, what do we do from here? Mm-hmm. And we didn't know what to do.
Did you sell them at your jobs?
No, never thought of that either. Mm. A good idea. I'm going to go back then and do that. Anyway, the band was a wonderful band. They were great guys. They all got along. That was important, you know. Every band I've been with after that, we didn't last but 2 or 3 years. Bands seemed to break up. But the Exotics was the best band. I even told some of the people I saw recently, that was the best band. We might have played better and had better equipment in California and L.A. and different places I've been, but the best band as far as guys getting along and enjoying music was the Exotics.
So you're still in junior high school?
Yep.
When the Exotics put out a record?
Yes.
Hmm. Do you recall the first local band you saw play live?
Yeah, it was Mike Wagner in the Bops, I think it was called back then.
And where did you see them?
I saw them at
the Crystal Coliseum?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we called it the Crystal Ballroom back then.
Was that the hot spot to see bands?
Yeah.
At that early time period?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. And Aldrich Arena comes to mind for some reason. I don't know why. Mm-hmm.
So what happens with the Exotics?
Well, we're playing and doing well, happy with our record. I didn't know where to go with it. And I heard that Gregory D and the Avanis needed a bass player. And I was getting frustrated because I didn't know where to go with our record. I didn't think we could grow anymore because they just sang backup and I was the lead singer. I went to Schlieff's Little City, I believe it was. And the Avanis were auditioning for the weekend. They were auditioning bass players. And Wally Wallstead and me and somebody else auditioned. And I got the job. I couldn't believe it. They liked the way I played the bass. And you're the bass player, they said. Oh, okay. And the next thing I know, I'm there.
So you made a switch from guitar to bass.
Yep, I made a switch from guitar to bass, but I had been playing bass in the basement, recording some of my old songs on an old tape recorder. What was it? That Roberts recorder, yeah. And I'd play the bass with some of my songs so I could hear what it sounded like.
Do you recall the first bass guitar you purchased?
Yeah, the first bass guitar I purchased was a Premier. And it had a thump thump sound to it. And it was, I had gold flecks all over it, like a motorboat. And it was just a funny looking thing. And I was kind of embarrassed, so I talked to a friend of mine, and he got me a Fender jazz bass that I could use, he said. I never gave it back to him, and I feel so bad. He was from the Litter. He was in the Litter. He was the bass player for the Litter. The Castaways. And I had his bass, Dick Roby, and he's still saying he wants the money for that bass, and now what it's worth. He wants that amount, which is a lot.
What did you do to prepare for the audition with the Avantes?
I let my hair grow long, tried to look like a Beatle the most I could, and I practiced off of a record called The Grind.
That was their big hit?
That was their big hit.
Summer of 64?
Mm-hmm. And I learned the bass part the best I could, and they wanted me to move around on stage while I played. That was hard because we never thought about that when we played. It was all just stand there and play. And moving around, that was like scratching your head or slapping your head and rubbing your stomach at the same time. That thing, you know, and we did. We managed to move around and free ourselves of that a little bit so we could look like somebody up playing and moving around on stage.
Do you recall your first job with the Avantes?
Yeah, I do.
Where was that?
That was at Schlieff's Little City. And it was on stage, and I played the songs there. And Bill Deal would come there, and he would throw records to the crowd, 45s. And some of the kids liked that, but some didn't, and they'd throw the 45 back. And they'd throw quarters for some reason. I don't know why. And I'd get hit with a quarter or a 45 record. And one time when it hit me, I kind of flinched. And I hit Bill Deal in the head with the end of my Fender bass. Now, they were a heavy bass. And I really whacked him. And I felt so bad. Here I am. I got a chance to play with the Avantes. And I'm embarrassing myself by whacking Bill Deal, the man, in the head with my bass. And that was a thing that became a tradition. And by God, every time he came and threw records to the crowd, I'd somehow end up hitting him in the head. I don't know if somebody cued it or what happened, but I'd accidentally bump him with the bass somehow. And it was funny because that always seemed to happen.
Were you nervous?
Yeah.
That first job with the Avantes?
Oh, yeah, very nervous.
So yeah. You had been out to see them play?
Yeah. Well, they were, you know, it's the number one band. And all of a sudden, next thing, I'm part of it. It changed my life completely. I was making big money. I was in medical school, and I quit. I told my parents I quit medical school.
So you had graduated from high school at this point.
Yeah. And I was in medical school. I got into medical school right away. My mom pulled some strings, and I got into pre-med, and I quit to play music. That's how much I loved music. I was going to make it in the music industry.
Okay, so you are now an official member of Gregory D and the Avantes, and I imagine they're playing pretty frequently at mm-hmm. this point in time.
Oh, yeah, we played all the time. We played every weekend.
What were some of the places you played?
We played the... One I can remember right away, of course, is the prom at the Midway, prom ballroom, mm-hmm. and the Marigold, Ryan's Ballroom, Dance Land.
Big Reggie?
Yeah, Big Reggie. You're right. Yes, Big Reggie.
There's a number of stories of various bands who played at Danceland that had the dance floor cave in on them in part of the dance floor. Do you recall that happening?
Recall that happening, but I remember a lot of fights. It was really bad. They'd have some big fights there. Rivals, you know, rival gangs. There were gangs back then. It was a lot of posing, but sometimes they'd really get into some fights, and you had to learn to put your knee against your mic stand, or you'd get your microphone in the mouth, you know, by a bunch of guys brawling in front of you.
What were some other places you
played? We played the Marigold Ryan's Ballroom, Dance Land, a lot of the armories. We'd play up in Duluth at some of the armories. Mr. Lucky's, of course, was like our home base. We'd always come back to Mr. Lucky's. That seemed to be the place that Avanis would go for. That was like a home base. And then the Safari Club and Schlieff's Little City, Dayton's Auditorium, Dayton's Top 10 Show, it was called.
Was that a popular event, the Dayton's shows?
Oh, yeah. There'd be like 2,000 kids there, and it would be on the radio. And the first time I came out and saw all those kids, I couldn't talk. My mouth came open and nothing came out. I was so shocked. They rushed the stage because Bill Deal introduced me as Minneapolis' own Paul McCartney. And the kids just went nuts. And I'd never seen this reaction before. I couldn't talk, and so right away Bruce Madison grabbed the mic and made it nice, smooth switch and talked. And then I could talk. And I just stood there and stared at these kids, and they looked at me, and it was my first exposure to a crowd, a big crowd like that. And there was 2,000 kids there at least.
Just for the record, who was in the band when you joined?
It was Greg Maland, Bruce Madison, Froggy Nelson, and me.
Now, you mentioned earlier a story about Dayton's giving you all
the clothes. Yeah, they furnished us with the best clothes money could buy. They just gave us everything, and we were so thankful to them for taking an interest in us like that. And we were models for them because we wore the clothes everywhere. When we were playing, when we weren't playing. I think I still have a shirt that's not worn out from then. But that was an amazing time. They gave us shoes. We'd get everything we needed. Bruce Madison would take us down to where the clothes were, and we'd put on all these clothes, and we'd take them home. And I thought, well, how am I going to pay for these? Well, we never did. Hmm. Yeah, that was nice. Very nice.
Now, you mentioned Paul McCartney. You had a physical resemblance, apparently.
Yeah, I did. And there was a time when the disc jockeys put me in a limo. They picked me up at my house one summer day and drove out to Lake Calhoun, the beach. And the Beatles were coming into town just a few days away. And they said, we're not going to say who's in the back of this limousine, but if anybody can guess who it is, you get free tickets to the Beatles concert. And it was me, but they had me in a shaded back part of the limo, and they made sure I was dressed up like McCartney. The kids rocked that limo till it almost tipped over. It was something else. It was scary, and it worked. So we went to all the beaches, I remember, and we were all laughing, all the disc jockeys and I, about how this was working, you know.
So it was a promotional stunt.
Yeah, it was a promotional stunt, and they got free tickets to the Beatles concert.
That was August in 65, and the Avanis played there, correct?
Yeah, we played in the entrance way going in to the main entrance. Off there was a wing area where you could walk around the whole stadium, and the bands played in those areas. That gave them a chance to be exposed with the Beatles, you know.